starting point. The kina that we're going to start with is kina 23. And it's based on a story in the Gemara of the son and daughter of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael was one of the great leaders, both as far as leadership and as far as being an amazing rabbi. And he was killed by the Romans, and his children were taken captive, each by different Roman slave owners. One boy, one girl, each a different Roman slave owner. And the son was very handsome, and the daughter was very beautiful, and the slave owners, not knowing that they had relatives there, the slave owners said, "Listen, we can make a lot of money off of this union. We'll make a shidduch between them, and we'll be able to keep the children and make a lot of money. It'll be beautiful children." So they were told about the plan. They were told that they did this plan, and they said, "We'll lock them somewhere. We keep them there." And they kept the children in the dark, and they couldn't even see each other, the children. And the girl, the daughter, cried all night. And she cried out, "How could the daughter of the high priest," Rabbi Shmuel was one of the high priests, "how could the daughter of the high priest marry a slave?" This is what she cried out. And he cried all night, "How could the son of the high priest take one of the servants as a wife?" And when the morning came and they were just crying the whole night, when the morning came and the sunlight filled the room, they recognized each other. That was brother and sister. They hugged, and yatsa nishmasan. That was the end of their lives. It ended in an embrace. That's the kina. That's the kina. The placement of this kina is very strange, how it got there right in the middle, number 23. Two kinas before, you have one of the most famous poems in the entire Tisha B'Av. You have the story of the great rabbis, the Arzei Halbanon, the great cedar that we read about also on Yom Kippur in the afternoon. The great rabbis of the time, one after the other, and what happened to them on Tisha B'Av. It's one of the most famous pieces one could read if they go through the Machzer. And then after that, you have Hechrisu Mimeni, which was about the martyrs of German Jewry, an early ancient medieval German Jewry, talks about that. Then it stops here to talk about the two kids. There's so many more big kinas to talk about the Crusades and all the great communities that have been destroyed. Why did we break up these big kinas? To stop to talk about just two random kids, the kids of Rabbi Yishmael. No one ever heard of them before, no one ever heard of them after. Why was this so important when the kinas were being put together to make a whole kina just about them? So I thought that the answers to this question gives us what we need to know to be able to understand what we're doing during this time period. Perhaps one answer of why this kina was so important is the following reason. Says Rav Soloveitchik, whose achrayus is it to remember the faceless Jews? Whose achrayus is it to remember? Whose responsibility is it to remember the individual? We all know we're going to remember the famous, the gedolim, the great rabbanim. We're going to remember the famous tzaddikim, the famous mothers. We're going to remember the famous communities. But who's going to remember just the regular people? Who's going to remember the nameless and the faceless? Who's going to remember? And says Rav Soloveitchik, that's why we have this kina. This kina is there to teach us that a Jew has an obligation not just to remember the major events in history, the events that happened to Jews throughout the generations, but a Jew has an obligation to remember the ones that nobody else is going to remember. That nobody else is going to remember. I remember my grandmother in Los Angeles had a friend. Her name was Mrs. Stern. And I remember she was the first person I ever witnessed who was seriously sick when I was a very young age. I was mainly 5 years old. And I remember she didn't have much family around. And I remember asking myself that who's going to say her name? Who's going to remember Mrs. Stern? just an individual person, single one person, that's it. Who's going to remember Mrs. Stern? And I said to myself, and I remember my sister also, that from time to time, we would talk about her. And this is what Rav Soloveitchik is getting at. That part of the responsibility of Tisha B'Av is to make it our job to remember not just the big ones, to remember the ones in between, the individual people, as best as we can. You know, we have in shul from time to time, a few times a year, people come to shul. I know in my shul, that's when it's packed, is yisker. Right? People say in the shul, you want to fill the shul, you should make every Shabbos a yisker Shabbos, right? You make yisker. People come for yisker. But what's yisker all about? What yisker is all about is saying the names of people you love, people that you remember, so that the world could remember for a little bit, remember these people. This is as hard as it is to talk about. This is what the 3 weeks, this is what the 9 days, this is what Tisha B'Av is leading up to. It's not just the big events. It's taking the time to remember. Look at what the Torah does. If you look at the Torah, every few parshia, certainly in the first book in Bereishis, it goes through names and names and names. Every couple parshias, you get every single shevet listed, all the tribes with the heads of tribes, the Nesiim, the second in command, the head one, everybody's family, who married who, and you get the whole thing. For what? Are Jews that into yichus that we need to know everything? The answer is because there's a very important thing in remembering a name. Thank you. There's something very important in remembering names. There's people in the Chumash, if you look certainly by the beginning of Bereishis, who played no role at all. There's not even a medrash on them. There's individuals in the Torah, there's not a medrash, there's nothing. So what are they in there? To say the names. To be able to say the names. When we want to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to God, what do we say? Hashem. Hashem in Hebrew means the name. The name. To say a name of someone, to talk about someone, to say their name, that's the greatest kavod you can give someone when they're alive, when they're not alive. To give them kavod, and that's part of what Tisha B'Av is about. To say their names, to talk about the people who are not as big, to talk about the people who might not have had the greatest impact in the world, but they're great because they lived, and that's it. So that, says Rav Soloveitchik, is why we mention these people in the Kina. Also, based on that, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says every single person is a world. Whoever causes one more person to live, you help one person live, it's as though you have saved an entire world. It's as though you saved an entire world. One person, that's all you need. So the Kina has these two little people. You don't need hundreds of names. You need two little people. And for that alone, could be what this Kina is all about. I thought of another reason of why make a big deal of these two people. I was in the airport a few weeks ago, and I saw they have now along JFK, along one of the terminals, they have a huge ad for a chemical company that donates a lot of money to Africa, and it has an image of a child running through with making bubbles all the way around through the perimeter of the airport. And I read right afterwards on the airplane, a few minutes afterwards, that the idea behind this advertising was research that was just conducted. And the research showed, opposite of what everybody thought, that when you want to raise money for a charity, so everyone always thought, you put a picture of a lot of children together. Or you put a picture of an entire community and homes that are being built for chesed, for gemilos chasadim, you put all of that together in a picture, and it moves people to want to give. The article found that it's the opposite. When people see so many children in a picture, or so many community projects being built, it's overwhelming for you. It's too much for you. You have a feeling like whatever I'm going to do can't help all of this. So the strategy is, you put a picture of only one person. Of only one person. That people can relate to. So I thought it could be that for a lot of Tisha B'Av, we're talking about entire communities that were lost. We're talking about very big things that happened during this period, very big tragedies that happened during this time. But maybe what this Kina is telling us is that in order to move the people, maybe you need to mention just the Kina with a couple simple people. maybe we can relate. It's hard to relate to events that happened so long ago. It's hard to relate to events that happened so many years ago. A building that we have never seen, we have only heard about. And Nebuch, we see what it is. For the younger generation, they have to watch movies on Tisha B'Av in order to relate to Tisha B'Av in any way. Right? If they're not seeing it, they can't understand Tisha B'Av in any way. And the further we go in the generation, the further we get from a concept of understanding of what was lost. And therefore, that kina is there to give us individual portraits of individual people. This was not just a building. This was not just this blob, this large community. These were people like you and me, pashut, simple people in a very difficult situation. And that could be why the kina is mentioned over here, to keep things very simple and so we could relate on some way. Perhaps a third reason of why this kina is phrased and is so important in the book that we have for Tisha B'Av. To review, we've said so far, the first reason for it is because it's our job to remember the faceless, as Rav Soloveitchik said. It's our job to remember those who have been, their names have been forgotten. The Pashuta individuals, it's our job to remember them. That's part of Chesed. Number two, the second idea we saw, is that people could respond when it's more personal. By the way, that fits very perfectly with the halachas. If you look at the laws of the 3 weeks, so the laws of the 3 weeks are there to match the same laws that people have, Rahmana Litzlam, when they go through mourning. When they go through Avelos, the laws are the same. They match exactly. Just the problem is, the Brisker Rav pointed out, the problem is, it's in the opposite order. Everything, all the laws that follow during when we start doing X, when we start doing Y, when we start doing this, it follows in the exact opposite order when we take on things. When we get, during Avelos, it gets easier and easier as the time goes on. 7 days, the laws are very intense the first day. Then 7 days, then 30 days, then the year. And it gets lighter and lighter and lighter. When it comes to the 3 weeks, it goes the opposite way. It gets more and more difficult. It starts off a little couple laws at the beginning of the 3 weeks. You don't have a total huge renovation projects and you can't buy, you know, something, a brand new car. And then it slowly, as the 9 days comes closer, we start, there's no meat. And more comes upon us, it gets more and more serious till finally have Tisha B'Av. So it's a velus in reverse. Everything's backwards. What happened? So says the Brisker Rav, a beautiful answer. The Brisker Rav says, this is not a velus flipped around. This is the same law, what we call Shmur Rechoka, that when someone finds out, you find out someone passed away that you were related to, but you didn't know, and it was a long time ago. It was a long time ago. So the laws go the opposite way, because now, since you don't have the shock, because it's not happening right now, it happened a while ago, you need to work your way step by step till you get to a Tisha B'Av. In general, when someone passes away, God forbid, you feel the shock right away, and slowly the feeling begins to wane. When something happened in the distant past, you need to work your way step by step till you could feel it. And that's this idea of trying to figure out how we could relate. And slowly, we need to find a way to relate to what Tisha B'Av is about, and it takes time. You can't just jump into Tisha B'Av. Take 3 weeks, take 9 days, take the Shavua Shechalbo, the week of Tisha B'Av itself, until finally you encounter Tisha B'Av and you hit the Tisha B'Av. But there's a different reason why we focus on this kina, which will shed light on what the 3 weeks and the 9 days is about. Many of us are here. I know that I'm here because, Baruch Hashem, thank God, there were survivors who made it. My grandmother was able to make it out after the war, to make it to France, and soon after come to America. And in St. Louis, she happened to meet a rabbi who brought her back to the religion of her childhood, of her youth. And with that, she came to Los Angeles, to a firmer community. And I'm here, and probably a rabbi, because of that rabbi in St. Louis. What this tells us is that not every survivor had a story. Not every survivor made it. What I mean is, from all those that survived, how many really survived? meaning from those that could come and make it out and survive after the horrors of the 1940s, how many were still able to make it in the 50s and 60s, are still here today as Jews, who have children and grandchildren are Jews today? How many survived from the survivors? That's the question. And this kina tells us the very difficult thought that not every survivor who survives really survives. Because it was Rabbi Shmuel, their father, who didn't make it. They survived, but they didn't survive. Not every survivor who survives actually makes it out. And that's their story. That's their story, that even though the Roman persecution was over, even though the damage was done, it was the last generation, it was just to their father. But it doesn't mean they were ever able to truly make it, to be able to raise children, to raise a Jewish family, to give to a Jewish community, to be part of it. And Nebuch, you had in the late 1800s, you had the Cantonists. The Cantonists, what were the Cantonists? The Cantonists were the ones that the Russians were hopping into the army from a very young age. They, 98%, never came back to Judaism. They didn't know any better. They left, they took them already when they were 9, 10 years old, and they were left out with the Russian army and had nothing to do with Judaism whatsoever. They didn't see it till they finally were allowed back at the age of 45 to go home, when they were finally had to go back from the conscription. The Chafetz Chaim, by the way, took it upon himself to write a book just for those who were taken into the Russian army. It was how to live your life as a Jew in the least way possible. How to be able to do the minimal amount you could to survive as a Jew. And he would stick the book in their coat pockets when they would go off to war. He would go as many as possible. It was one of his earliest printings. Most people don't know about it. They know the Chafetz Chaim for the Lashon Hara books, but they don't know that the Chafetz Chaim actually printed this book for those going off to war. So in the Cantonist army, we're on Cantonists for a minute here. So one of the great Musar speakers, Rav Yisrael Petterberger, who was the student of Rav Yisrael Salanter, he once happened to be stopped because of the snow in Russia, in St. Petersburg, and he couldn't make it home for Yom Kippur. And he ended up in what was a shul. He walks in and he saw this was the famous Cantonist shul. It was the shul where there was nobody else there except Nebuch, these kids who had grown up and had nothing. They had no family, they weren't allowed to get married, they weren't allowed to do anything until they were 45. And all they had was this Cantonist shul. And he went into the Cantonist shul and he said, "I hope you don't mind, I have to be here for Yom Kippur." And they said, "No problem, of course." Said, "I hope you don't mind also, I'm always the Baal Tefillah back in my shul. I'm always leading the davening on Yom Kippur. Do you mind, unless you have a chazakah here, do you mind if I lead the services on Yom Kippur?" They thought about it, they said, "No problem." Finally, one of the Cantonists came over to him and said, "Listen, I want you to know, I wasn't allowed to get married. I wasn't allowed to have a family. I wasn't allowed to study in a Jewish school. The only thing I have is when I get up to daven in front of this congregation before Ne'ilah. That's all I have in my life, to be able to say Yisgadal v'Yisgadash before Hashem and before my Cantonist peers, my Chaverim. That's all I have in this world. If you don't mind, I want to finish the Ne'ilah." And Rabbi Saul Petterberger said, "It would be my honor. I would never in my life," he said, "ever hear a Ne'ilah like the one I heard on that day." But the point is, it shows you that not every survivor who survived actually made it, who are here to raise families, to be successful, to come and have great education and provide education for families. That's what this kina reminds us. I saw a book recently. I don't know how it ended up in my office. People come and they give books. So I guess they want to speak in the shuls. So they drop off books in your office. You don't even know how it gets there. So I saw one book in my office a few weeks ago. He didn't want to speak in my shul. I don't know if he's still around. The Nobel Prize winner, Imrich Kurtzes. It's a book called Faithless. Yeah. He's still around. He's still alive. You know the book. So he dropped off the book. And he wrote about his experiences growing up in the camps. And he says over there he was a child in a Hungarian school. And his teacher quoted an old Roman philosopher, he said, that we are educating not for school, but we are educating for life. And when we read a kina like this, that's what we realize we're doing. We're trying to replenish the generations that are lost. We're trying to re-educate the generations that are lost. The Ponovitcher Rebbe once said a very strong line. The Ponovitcher Rebbe said, A child without parents is an orphan, but a nation without children is also an orphan. And the point the Panovich Rebbe was getting at, there's nothing more important than rebuilding and re-educating and reteaching, and that's also what this kina teaches us. That without these children, without them around, without them there, the next generation could not be passed on to. There was no one to give it on to in the next generation. It's one of the values, one of the great ideas of this kina. My mother's extended family comes from, she's Hasidic on one side, Lithuanian on the other side, a nice European chulent. And her mother's family comes from a little Polish village called Mogilnitz. And 9 miles, it's about, right outside of Warsaw. From there? Oh, wow. Oof, gosh. 10 miles outside of Warsaw. And I have a book also in my office called Three Mogilnitzes. And it's about three Jews who came here at the beginning of the 1900s. Max Schnitzer, Louis Rappaport, and Isaac Rappaport. What did they do when they got here? They were dedicated to make as much money as possible so they could bring everyone over, one by one, as much as they could, from Mogilnitz. And they set up schools and daycare centers. The stum still stand in Philadelphia. They built as many as they ran in the tri-state area. They put up as much as they could just for this community so they could feel at home. So you could imagine what Mogilnitz looked like. You know what? You don't have to imagine. I'll read to you one paragraph from the book. From time to time, news reached us that there were no more Jews left there. The noted American writer Ben Hecht described in a heart-wrenching article he published in Reader's Digest in 1943 February how the Nazis broke into the old synagogue in Yom Kippur in Mogilnitsa and drove all men, women, and children into the ghetto. The older never made the walk. Many didn't make it in Auschwitz. Some escaped to Russia, but some made their way to Israel. And the same three provided relief centers in Israel itself. And one of them, Isaac Rappaport, said that there is nothing a person could do in their lives that is greater than giving one person, a chance to build back up again. A chance to come back and restart. So this kina is a story of two people because it tells you how precious two people are, how valuable two people are, and from that we could rebuild entire communities to rebuild people. The Kotzker, a great line from the Kotzker Rebbe. The Kotzker Rebbe said, I was given the power, says the Kotzker, to resurrect the dead. But I choose something more difficult, to resurrect those who are living. What a beautiful line, and it summarizes what this kin is about. The survivors, those who came out. The story of the few who made it. Do we help them continue to move forward in the next generations, to continue and not to give up, that there is a next generation who is left. There is a next generation is here. The amount of day schools and the yeshivas, and they're growing. Do you remember there's in England, you could see Trafalgar Square. And Lord Nelson, in his one of his great naval battles against Napoleon, right? Napoleon was one of the greatest warriors in the history of humanity, and Lord Nelson was wounded in battle in one of his eyes. It was the battle. I think it was the Battle of Copenhagen. He lost his eyesight in one eye. The commanding officer said, "I order you to retreat. I want you to come back immediately." He took the scope to his blind eye and said, "I'm sorry, I can't see anybody giving me the order." And he marched forward and he continued to fight against Napoleon. This mamish was one of the ends of Napoleon when Lord Nelson turned back around after saying, "I can't see the person giving me the order." Not to give up. That there's a next generation that always needs us. There's a next generation that needs us to continue. I suggest the following. Might be wrong, but it's just a suggestion. Why is it that we get up in the middle of Tisha B'Av? Sitting on the floor Tisha B'Av morning, and the halacha is midday, we get up on Tisha B'Av. Wait till Tisha B'Av's over. What are we getting up in the middle of Tisha B'Av? The answer is this kina. because there's always more survivors who need us to get working. We could sit in the morning of Tisha B'Av and we have a velus in the morning and we work towards it, we build towards it in the 3 weeks, in the 9 days, in the Shavua Shechalbo. But there's always more people who need us to visit them, who need us to help them, who need us to be there for them. So the middle of Tisha B'Av we get up, the men put on tefillin already, the middle of Tisha B'Av. It's already that the day is half over. Because there's no time to continue sitting. You have to get up and continue to move forward and make a difference and to be there for the individual people, for one after the other. I close with the following idea. We've looked at maybe four reasons for this kina, four reasons what it's doing here in the machzer, why it's there in the Tisha B'Av liturgy, and how it sheds light on what we're doing during the 3 weeks, during Tisha, during the 9 days, and now, and when we get to ultimately Tisha B'Av. But I close with the following story, and maybe this is why the kin is there. There's a story from the Baal Shem Tov that the Mezritcher Magid, who was the great student of the founder of Chassidus, the Baal Shem Tov, the Mezritcher Magid went over to the Baal Shem Tov and said, "Listen, some of the students are a little bit upset that you spend so much time with the riffraff. You have elite students, tzaddikim over here, righteous people next to you, and you spend the majority of your Shabbos surrounded by the people who don't know anything, by the people who are low lives. You're with them all the time." He goes, "Spend some more time with the tzaddikim, forget the other ones. The future of Klal Yisrael is going to be from the tzaddikim, from the pioneers. Leave behind the others." So that Shabbos, when the Baal Shem Tov heard that message, at night, he ate with everyone, which always bothered the tzaddikim. During the day, he ate just with the tzaddikim, as was the custom, when they could talk about pressing issues in the community. Shalosh Shudos, he invited everyone for the closing meal. And that Shalosh Shudos, instead of giving one of his holy students the kos, the cup to make the final benching on, he gave it to one of the schleppers. He gave him the cup. And the tzaddikim couldn't believe this. They were shocked. They were going to faint. They were going to the cup of the Baal Shem Tov he's putting in the hands of this guy over this lowlife who barely davens. So what happened was, the Baal Shem Tov told them each to close their eyes, everyone in the room, and to put their hands on each other's shoulders. And when they closed their eyes, the tzaddikim heard screaming and crying. And they realized that the voices they heard screaming and crying were the voices of the schleppers and the lowlives who didn't know how to daven, who didn't know how to learn, who didn't have people around them that they could find a way to grow from, to hear Torah from. And the Mezritcher Magid reports in his book, the Mezritcher Magid said, that day the students of the Baal Shem Tov began to tremble and shake for the next 5 days straight because they heard the loneliness of all the simple Jews surrounded around the Baal Shem Tov. The Mezritcher Magid says, maybe in the schus, in the merit of the pashut simple Jews, the average individual person, like the kina describes, two people, a boy and a girl, the simple people, maybe in the merit of remembering the lonely Jews, being there for the lonely pashut Jews, who hold on to their amunah even still, maybe then, will be zocheh, will merit to greet the Mashiach, b'mheira b'yameinu.